Hey, good morning, everybody. It's March 1st, 2006, and this is Dave Weiner at Morning Coffee Notes podcast, and I haven't done one of these in a while, but I do seem to manage to get to do one, at least one, every month, and today being March 1st, well, you know, at least I got March covered, that's for sure. Today's a pretty good day. We came out with what I call the public preview, or the beginning of the public review of OPML 2.0. And I think that this is going to turn out to be, OPML 2.0 is going to turn out to be very much like RSS 2.0 was in the summer of 2002, when basically why they're similar is that at that time, RSS had gone through, it had gone through 0.90, 0.91, 1.0, 0.92, and then we were talking about version 0.94, and this was while 1.0, this was like 2 years after 1.0 had shipped, and it's sort of like, well, that's ridiculous. Why are we doing something that has a lower number? And so I said, fine, let's just take what we're calling 9.4 and call it 2.0 and put a new spec out and then say, okay, this is what I think basically RSS should be for the foreseeable future. And it was, of course, very contentious, and there was a lot of sort of arguing and flaming and stuff, which there always is on the internet. About this kind of stuff. It's, you know, people like to say, well, it's because, you know, Dave's not a very nice person or whatever. Well, you know what, if you were to do a controlled scientific experiment on this, you'd find that the flaming would have happened had, I mean, if you look at the history of soap where I pulled out after pretty early on in the process, you know, flaming continued and then, you know, the spec never coalesced. It never became anything that like sort of became ubiquitously useful, anything remotely like what RSS has become. So I don't think that you can make any conclusions about like whose fault it is that there was flaming, and net in the end, it doesn't really matter that there was flaming because we ended up getting a pretty good format, not a perfect format, but a pretty good one, and one that works in the market. I mean, how do I know it works? Because it spawned this huge, huge market, and it always, it just seems to be growing in ever more impressive ways. I just can't sometimes believe how big RSS has gotten, and then next month it gets even bigger. So, you know, I don't feel I need to explain to anybody, I don't need to explain myself as to why, you know, I did anything the way I did it. It turned out really well, and you know, like everything else in life that you learn, that it isn't perfect. I mean, I'm not perfect. My friends aren't perfect. I wouldn't want to be perfect, and I wouldn't want my friends to be perfect. And you know, today the weather is like right now. It's like bright and sunny, but I can see the clouds over the hills, and the sun comes in, it goes out, and pretty soon I think it's probably going to be pouring rain. And you know, in some sense, it's perfect when it's sunny, okay? But viewed from another point of view, it's perfect when it's raining. Why? Because, well, if it never rained, well, everything would dry up and the hills would burn here in the East Bay in California. And believe me, the hills like to burn here. And it's good when it rains because, in fact, you could say it's perfect when it rains, even though it's not really great weather to go out for a walk or to go shopping or even somehow it's a little depressing when it rains so much, you know, but it still is good that it rains. So anyway, with all that preamble, everything seems to have settled down in RSS. Thankfully, I saw today on the mail list where the, you know, the controversy was taking place that the controversy is now over. And we're now, I think, all in agreement that if one does a best practices document, that is absolutely no threat to the roadmap for RSS 2.0. Anybody can do a best practices document. Nobody No, one person doing a best practice document does not interfere with somebody else doing one. And as long as it's carefully labeled, it's not in any way official, then everybody's fine. Then, you know, basically, if you make a mistake there, you know, it doesn't screw everything up, right? And so we're happy. Everything's good. So, and just by coincidence, and I swear to God, it was a total coincidence, this morning was the day that OPML 2.0 reached the public review stage. And it all the private review stage happened very quickly. It happened in less than 24 hours. And, you know, ideally, I'd like to go straight from here's what I've written to everybody have a look. But I didn't feel comfortable doing that. I wanted to have a handful of, about, I guess in the end, it was about 15 or 20 people looking at it for a period of 24 hours. And I guess about six or seven of them were like making very active suggestions in which I was responding to very quickly. In other words, the spec went through a lot of changes in the last 24 hours, and they were very good changes. And I really appreciate the suggestions that people made. Dan McTuff, Brent Simmons, Andrew Grummet, Bella Labovich, I think is how you pronounce her last name. Gosh, I know I'm forgetting a few people. Kevin Burton, Sean Lindersay, anyway, if I forgot your name, I'm sorry. It's my Alzheimer's is kicking in. In any case, I spent some time on the phone this morning with Stephen Cohn, who is a librarian who works at PubSub. And Stephen is the editor of the Library Stuff weblog, which is an excellent blog. And he's one of the earliest librarian bloggers out there. And Stephen, like I hope many librarians to come, has absolutely fallen in love with OPML. And I think it's like totally appropriate. OPML, even more than blogging, even more than RSS, is like the... it's designed for what librarians do. It's designed for knowledge and relating one set of knowledge to another set of knowledge and doing it in an extremely elegant way, if I do say so myself. Stephen sent me an email saying, well, you know, it's great that you've done OPML 2.0, but since I'm a non-technical user, all I can do is just say I don't have any idea why it's so good, but it obviously is a good thing. And I said, let's have a phone talk, because I don't buy that. I think there are plenty of things in OPML 2.0 that I think I can easily explain why they're significant for users. And I'd like to give it a try. And so I did, and we ended up agreeing that there are, and it's easy to understand. And so I thought, let's just take what I talked about with Stephen, let me try turning that into a podcast and see what happens. So what I did was, first of all, we both opened up the draft spec, and this is a draft spec, which means that it can change, and don't complain if it does. It's in a period of public review right now, which means that really it can change. And that's the whole point of a public review, is so that, you know, if people feel that this is really the wrong way to do it, and let's have a look and see what we need to do. Many of the ideas that are in here have already been through that kind of a review. They were published as requests for comment documents, or RFCs, late last year. And they really did change while they were in that phase of RFC-ness. However, more people are going to be looking at it now for sure. And when they see how everything all fits together, it may well be. I, in fact, would be very surprised if the spec didn't change, even in major ways between now and the time that it's actually closed off. So please do read it, and please don't feel that if you don't have a technical background that you can't understand. A person with intelligence and common sense, I think, and some patience should be able to figure out what's going on here, at least maybe not in every aspect, but in many aspects. So I asked Stephen to scroll down to the "What is ahead" section, and take a look at the owner ID element, which is new. in OPML 2.0. And it says, owner ID is the HTTP address of a web page that contains an HTML form that allows a human reader to communicate with the author of the document via email or other means. Now, simply what that means is that I can get in touch with the person who created the document that I'm reading without them having to publish their email address. In OPML 1.0, which was first specified in the year 2000, we called for, and in fact it's still there, the owner email element. And that was the purpose of that was the to allow you to contact, to make it easy to contact the person who was the author of the document. The reason being is that these are very often public documents that lots of people see, and it's the way for you to suggest adding a link to the document. And I want to be able to contact the author of the OPML that I'm looking at right at the moment, even if it's not the author of the main document. It's just, you know, if the OPML is being included within a greater directory, I want to be able to contact the person who's responsible for the piece of text I'm looking at right now. Well, in 2000, publishing an email address wasn't considered hugely controversial, and because spam wasn't a huge problem in 2000. But now, 6 years later, spam is, you know, spam is a huge problem, and nobody wants to publish their email address. But yet, in OPML 1.0, it very much explicitly asks you to do that. It's not a requirement, but it asks that you do that. So what we've done is provided another way for you to specify a means of contacting a human being that that may be more resistant to spam. We don't know for sure if it is or it isn't. However, we felt, and this was extensively reviewed, that whatever art there is in terms of preventing spam, that it should be possible that that would be expressed in the form of an HTTP address. So that this element of the spec, we believe, has a pretty good chance of surviving a test of time. That it what works today may not be exactly what works, you know, 6 years from now, but that the way this is specified is flexible enough to allow new methods to be invented and still fit into the context of the spec. So there's a very pragmatic, real-world improvement to OPML that I think basically anybody who uses the internet can appreciate and understand. There's not really much difficulty with that. The very next element, which is, I believe, much less important, is but still nice to have, is the docs element that was borrowed from RSS. And it says docs is the HTTP address of the documentation for the format used in the OPML file. And the idea there is if somebody stumbles across your OPML file 25 years from now and doesn't know what they're looking at, it'd be kind of nice if the document pointed to the place where the format is explained. Just to, you know, so it's optional. You don't have to include it, but if you want to, there it is. You see a lot of RSS documents that have that in there, and it immediately tells me as I'm looking at it that this is, you know, that that the person cares that you understand what they're doing, and so I kind of like it when I see that there. Let's see. So then scroll down to I should give you the URL of the document. The document is www.opml.org/spec2. That stands for spec version 2.0. There's now a category attribute, a special attribute for categories, which works like the RSS 2.0 category. Very important, and I'm not going to go into great detail about this, is that the definition of subscription lists is now included in the OPML spec. It wasn't in version 1.0, yet subscription lists was the single largest, by far the largest application of OPML out there, and it probably makes OPML the number two XML-based format out in the on the web, simply because it's the way people, you know, move their lists of feeds from one feed reader or aggregator to another feed reader or aggregator, because it was the format that we used in Radio Userland, which pretty much was the first RSS feed reader. If a competitor of ours wanted to read our subscription list, well, then they had to read our OPML because that's how we published the subscription list. And over time, because it hasn't been spe it wasn't written down, it was all done by word of mouth. That there's been sort of like some drift in and some incompatibilities have crept into it. So the hope is now that it is the format is specified in the actual OPML spec, that we are going to be able to get the feed readers and aggregators to be more compatible. It's important not to like beat anybody up over the head because it's not their fault that there's been this drift. It's been difficult for developers to know what the actual format that they're required to support is. So it's only now becoming clear for them in writing that this is what they need to do. So please, it's better to ask, and then be thankful when somebody supports the common practice, than it is to sort of hit them over the head and say, you bad person, you're not supporting the standard. It's better to be appreciative when they do, than to hate them when they don't. You get better results, I find, and it's more fair, as I said, since in this case it was not specified in version 1.0. In the very next section, about inclusion, which inclusion is like the coolest part about OPML. It's where I get to delegate to another author and say, okay, I don't know very much about the American League in baseball, but hey, I've got a baseball directory. I better include something about the American League in there. So what I'll do is I will include your directory in mine, and whenever you make a change to your directory, it will automatically be reflected in mine. That's called inclusion. Well, the way inclusion worked in and works, continues to work in 1.0, is very awkward. Basically, in order to include an OPML file in another OPML file, the actual address, the URL of the document needed to end in .opml. And boy, what a huge problem that's been. And unfortunate, very unfortunate design decision. And I take full responsibility. That was my decision, and it was a bad decision. And I don't want to live with this one. I want to gradually migrate from that to a new type that's called include, which the URL for an include out a node type can only be an OPML document, and therefore it totally doesn't matter what the URL ends with. It can end with .php or .xml or dot who cares. It can end with whatever you like it to end with, and it will all still work. So now you can't immediately start using this because there aren't any processors today at this instant, at 10:24 a.m. Pacific time on March 1st, 2006. There aren't any processors that understand that. Okay, so it's going to be what we call a bootstrap, which means first, somebody on the reading side will support it. Then we'll produce a sample file. In fact, I've already produced a sample file. It's an example of this. And then they'll make sure that it works with the example. And then you'll have one place where you can use this. Still probably not enough, but then there'll be two, and then there'll be three. And then over time, it'll become a feature that you'll pretty much expect to see there, and then you can start writing it. Then you can start using it. So this is a bootstrap, basically. We're going to go very carefully, step by step, but hopefully within, let's say, a year from now, there'll be virtually universal support for the include node type. Maybe even less than a year, who knows? But one wants to set the expectations in such a way so that we can, achieve them or exceed them. Then the other two important areas that I'd like to point you to, and just so you get a flavor for how this stuff works, are the and these two areas, sections of the spec are very much related. There's the extending OPML section, and there's the roadmap. Now, we've seen recently how important the roadmap is in RSS, and I've learned a lot from the roadmap in RSS, and it's heavily influenced what will be the roadmap for OPML. Now, I have not published the roadmap yet because this is just a review document. And so I say basically when the roadmap appears, this is more or less what it's going to say. And there won't be any wiggle room in here about modifications. That's why we're having a long review period, as long as it takes for things to settle down. And that probably, I figure, is about 60 days. That's why we're going to spend some time doing the review process, okay? And when this spec is frozen, it is frozen. It will not change. There will not be clarifications. There will not be minor releases. This was a bad idea in RSS 2.0. I'm sorry I did it. It ended up wasting huge amounts of time in arguments about what's a minor thing, what's a clarification, whatever. I probably should have known. I did, by the way, at the beginning of this spec, and I wish I had done this in RSS, said that you need to read these specs with common sense. You can't be a lawyer here. You have to sort of use your common sense here. And if people understand that, then we're not going to get into all these arguments about the various things we get into arguments about. I don't even want to mention them because when I do, that becomes a whole nother cause for controversy. I mean, people will say that I'm speaking spec text, and Dave, you said this in a podcast, and listen, sometimes I speak in my, I didn't want to go there. Okay. Now this is spec text. Okay. So when you look at the OPML 2.0 spec, when it is frozen, then you can say, okay, then what does the spec say? But let's not open the door. Let's do a good job of doing a review here. And when the door is closed, it is closed. Now, what you want is, when the door closes, you want to say, well, here's how you can build another door, okay? In other words, once the main door is closed, let's put in a couple of back doors. Let's say, well, you know, you can count on all this stuff not changing. All the stuff that you see on this page, that's not going to change. But here, this is how, if we find a terrible mistake or a terrible omission or something that would be so cool to do that if the spec was only not frozen, we could just do it. Then that's what the extending OPML section is for. It says when you get something like that, hey, this is what you do. Let's provide for it, but then let's not let the foundation, you know, shake just because you found a problem or because you had this cool idea. Let's not stop the cool ideas and let's not stop the fixes because those are good. But let's also provide a stable platform because, frankly, it takes a while for these platforms to really become, as I've explained, I mean, it might take a year for the include node type, even though it's very simple, relatively simple to explain and fairly easy to implement, right? It still is going to take quite a long time before you get it adopted across a substantial enough part of the install base so that you can actually start using it. So in order for those things to happen, you need to get stability. You need to have things not rock and roll. You don't want lots of change there, but you do want the possibility of change. You want to allow for the possibility of change so that in case something really, really does change in the world that this thing is trying to model, or a new, you know, some new idea comes along, that you don't have to, that you have a way to work with that kind of change. And the extending OPML section is intended to do that. It says basically you can use the standard W3C, or actually the recommended, that they like to call them, and I do too. And I did use the word standard earlier in this podcast, and I like to like redact that and say recommendation because I don't like to say things are standards. I like the W3C. I think they're right there. They have a recommended way of extending XML documents called namespaces. And so I say in OPML 2.0, like RSS 2.0, this worked out quite well within reason. I address that in the third paragraph of the extending OPML section, we use the namespace mechanism in XML and say basically you can include elements that are in namespaces in OPML documents. There's also another form of extension that's unique to OPML, And this is something that I want to explain even more detail because it relates to something that is in the OPML editor. And probably once OPML really gets installed in amongst the base of outliner tools out there, they'll probably want to do this as well. That the type attribute on an OPML node turns out to be an incredibly powerful place to pivot for extensibility. So it's basically your route through to different code depending on what the type is to handle double clicking and handle various different user gestures that apply to outline nodes. And everybody, and there aren't many people, okay, that have been there, but everybody who's been there in the OPML editor goes, well, okay, that's really cool. We don't want to do anything to close that off because that's very, very useful. So we're not going to ever publish a list of all the node types, okay? And that's, and I know that's going to be unsettling for some people, but the plan is not to do that because that is an axis of extensibility for OPML. Then the third paragraph, and this addresses, this was like a huge, huge problem in the RSS community. I think it was in like 2003 or late 2002. It's the whole business about funkiness. And here's what it says here. And I wish this had been in the RSS spec because it's an important guideline. Not that it probably wouldn't have had that much of effect because I think the community would have done what they were going to do anyway. But I think that we're all a lot smarter now and we've been down this road and I don't think anybody wants to go back to the messes that we had before. So I put this language in here as basically, think of it as a guideline, not a hard and fast rule. It's something to think about when you're considering using something, inventing something in a new namespace, or inventing a new node type for that matter. And it says developers should, whenever possible, use capabilities that are already in use by others, or included in this spec, or recommendations or guidelines. And the idea there is basically check it out and see if somebody else hasn't done what you're going to do here before. And then if they have, then just do it the same way they did it. And it is so cool when people do that. First of all, the guy that you're emulating usually thinks it's great that you're emulating him. Why? Well, because, you know, it's flattery. It's saying, hey, what you did was pretty smart. And since it was so smart, why don't we just do it the same way? The people who on the other side, on the receiving end, who have supported what that person did are totally going to appreciate it because then they don't have to do another set of code to support what you've done. And the internet, in some sense, appreciates it too, because it keeps the barriers to entry really low. It means that new software that comes along later, there's less that they have to do. And that means that developers can, instead of focusing on all kinds of compatibility issues, can focus on making the software easier to use, making it perform better, making it cheaper, and adding features that they wouldn't have the time to add because if Postel's Law, which is just all the time looking so much smarter and smarter and smarter. Postel's Law says be conservative in what you send and liberal in what you receive. It means basically if somebody throws something weird at you, you got to try to understand it. But if you have a choice, then you should do it the way the guy that came before did it. And see, I think that Postel's Law has a corollary that says it applies to all of us too. In other words, it's not just you that have to be conservative in what you send. We all have to be conservative in what we send because that keeps the complexity of the internet down. And that, friends, is the magic of the internet. It is simple. It is, in the spirit of RSS, it is really simple. And that's why the internet works. And that's why the internet trumped everything that the software industry came up, that the tech industry came up with, because the tech industry didn't buy into the really simple model. In a sense, you can think of the tech industry as being the element of the world that believes in making things utterly complex. They would have come up with UCS, utterly complex syndication. Why? Because that's their job security. That's their barrier to entry. That's how they keep other people from competing with them. And in the days of the heyday of the tech industry, when I grew up or came of age, however you want to look at it, IBM was the master of this. They called it fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And what they would do is they would just throw so much complexity at it, that at a problem, that basically the users would just have to go with them because their software was the only one that worked. And that's why, backing up all the way to the beginning of this podcast, that's why when Stephen Cohen said to me that, oh my goodness. I think I got an error dialog here. Hopefully you've been hearing all the stuff I've been saying. That's why when Stephen Cohen said to me that, I'm going to go right back into this. Hopefully that error dialog was about something else. Let's see. That's why when Stephen Cohen said, well, it's too technical, I can't understand, I said, come on, Stephen, let's give it a try. Let's see if we can't like get through that. And we did. And hopefully this worked for you too. And now you'll feel that OPML, even if you're not a very technical person, even if things sort of tend to confuse you in technology, that you'll feel that OPML is something that belongs to you. It's something that you use, that and that if ever anybody says to you, pats you on the head and says, hey, this is too complicated for you to understand, you say, well, you better go listen to Dave Weiner's podcast, because Dave says it is not too complicated. And that's what I say. It's not too complicated. Anything that's in here, if you're intelligent and have common sense and are patient, there's anything in here, there's nothing in here that you can't understand. It's all sensible, I hope. And if it's not, ask me and I'll try to explain it. Anyway, so that's our morning coffee notes. Hopefully this all got through. Our morning coffee notes for March 1st, 2006. And thanks very much for listening. Y'all take care, and we'll see you again real soon. Take care. Bye.